Hello, welcome to Ruthie, Uni, Dad and Me, but no uni at the moment, Ruthie.
No uni. I'm back from uni.
Yes, a hugely long break, December the 6th to January the 6th, something like that.
A month. Just right.
What do you say, just right?
And no, I already miss it quite a bit, actually.
You miss uni?
Mm. But then I don't know whether I should have stayed for a week and then gone back a week early and then had like less time, but I needed the time off, the lessons.
Mm.
It's very taxing.
Well, I can see how taxing it's been because you've come back with work to do. But your comment on that is it'll do sort of next week.
It'll keep to next week.
Yes. So you've had a week, as we say, decomposing, haven't you?
Decompressing.
Oh, sorry, decompressing. Well, you watched Sanditon, the Jane Austen adaptation.
Yeah.
All three episodes of that. You watched, movie-wise, what have we watched in movies?
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, go on, what have you
watched yesterday?
Well, we watched that together, which we'll talk about later. But you watched random Netflix kind of movies?
Oh, I watched something called The Princess Switch, which was perhaps the worst film I've ever seen. So Vanessa Hudgens, who, if you don't know, was the star of High School Musical back in the day, plays both princesses. It's in a Christmas town. And they don't know each other exist. And it's never really explained why they're twins. Apparently they have some granddad who's the same. But they're not twins. They just look really, really alike. So then they switch places. And they both fall in love with the other person's person who they weren't really in love with. And then one of them stays being the princess of somewhere that's called, like, Trinovia or...
Yeah, we know this.
No, it's called Bavaria.
Bavaria.
Which is a genuine place.
Yes, Bavaria is a proper place.
Yeah, so they've stolen Bavaria.
Right, do they literally call it Bavaria? You sure they're not calling it
Genovia? No, I'm pretty sure they call it Genovia.
Genovia.
The land I call my home.
Genovia.
That gets stuck in my head so often, the national anthem of Genovia.
Genovia was the one with Julie Andrews.
No, The Princess Diaries is a genuine, like, quite good film.
Mm.
Anne Hathaway, Julie Andrews is very good. It has an actual plot, it has explanations, it has exposition, has, you know, tension and stuff. I don't want it lumped in with The Princess Switch, which is a Netflix original film, and it is diabolical.
Yes, a lot of Netflix original films are pretty poor, aren't they?
But we watched it separately, but I watched a Netflix film which I then said you should watch.
Mm, I did watch
Which was
that.
Marriage Story.
Yeah, we'll maybe talk about that. I also saw The Irishman on Netflix.
I've not seen that.
That's great, but I don't think you'd enjoy it. And if you're a fan of Goodfellas, it's really good.
I've never seen Goodfellas.
If you've never seen Goodfellas,
it would be hard for me to be a fan.
Yeah, Lord of the Trips. Anyway, because you're not at university at the moment, it sort of dilutes the raison d'etre of the podcast, because we can talk about you being off university, and it sort of reverts to what used to happen.
I can't give you any university anecdotes, really.
No.
Being not there
at the moment.
It's difficult.
It is. But it reverts to what the original podcast was, which means that I can start with a lame joke. Which is...
I mean, I don't know about that. I still am a student.
You still are a student, but you haven't got any York Rush for us.
I have. Those still exist, yeah.
I know it still exists. Oh, so you still look at it while you're...
Yeah, of course I do, Dad. Not as often. I only looked at it because of this.
Have you found a nice one?
Because I know I'm not getting one, you know? If I'm not there...
No.
I can't have one. Mm. So, yeah, do you want me to tell you my York Rush?
Tell me your York Rush.
Okay, JC, grey hair, socialist, keep seeing your face about, would love to see you run the country, you sexy man.
That's rather good. But those,
that was quite nice.
We're not going to get a grey-haired socialist running the country, which we will talk about in just a second. But I'd also prepared a lame joke. It's one of Milton Jones's one. He's a very good one-liner merchant. And his one-liner is, oh, my granddad, he was a real ladies' man. Doesn't matter how clearly the gents was marked. It's not bad.
That's bad.
That's rather bad. But let's talk about the election. So it's
just
now
for context. Yeah, it's the Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th.
Which
it's
is
the morning.
Apt.
It is. We've woken up to it. Well, in fact, we saw it all last night. And
saw the exit polls, which were incredibly accurate. They did very well.
Yeah, Labour did slightly better than it said in the
What was the official end thing? It said
about 203 Labour got, and it said in the exit poll
191. Oh, so they did quite a lot better.
So this is quite a bit better, but it was more or less accurate. We knew it was going to be a disaster for Labour. And there are some people, like your very wise father, who's been telling you for 2.5 years...
Oh, I'm sick of hearing the words, "I've been saying it for 3 years," have come out of your mouth more than anything. Mm. I'm bored of it.
But I have I not?
You've been saying that you don't like Jeremy Corbyn, but I genuinely don't think this is all down to Jeremy Corbyn.
I would say it was 90% Corbyn. 90%
no.
Corbyn. Definitely. It was only when... Because I stayed up till like 3 o'clock in the morning watching the various defeated Labour MPs coming on.
How are you not more tired?
I've just got a lot of energy. But anyway, so I stayed up till like 3 o'clock in the morning, and the number of people who came on and said, on the doorstep... People didn't want to talk about Brexit on the doorstep. That's absolute nonsense. People wanted to talk about Corbyn. And the problem is, they were so intent on taking over the Labour Party, Momentum, all those people, Seamus Milne, all the guys around Corbyn, that they turned it, and I tweeted this 2.5 years ago, that he's turned it from a proper political party into a fan club. You know, when I saw that Glastonbury stuff, ooh, Jeremy Corbyn, I thought, he's not going to win votes in Wakefield. No, nobody in Wakefield or Hemsworth or any of those places is going to vote for Jeremy Corbyn, because those people can't afford to go to Glastonbury for a start.
Yeah. But that's why I'm saying it wasn't just a Corbyn thing, it was a forgotten heartlands in inverted commas.
And Corbyn, with all his Islington Council mates,
you can't win an election in London.
No, there's no way he was going to take the north of England, because they just...
But he had it, that's the thing. It wasn't a question of even taking it, he had it,
precisely.
But lost it. It genuinely has really upset me. Like, it brought brought a tear to my eye.
Hmm.
When the election results started coming out.
But I did warn you. I pre-prepared you.
No, I'm not having that, because I was saying to you, I think there's this big echo chamber on Twitter, I don't think they're going to get in, like blah, blah, blah. And you said, I think they've done a lot better than we were expecting. Oh, I think the tide's really turned. These were all things you said the day before yesterday. So
yes.
Don't you say that it's been 2.5
right.
years of you being absolutely sure of yourself.
I was completely convinced that Corbyn was useless from the start. However, on social media, I have to say, the young people who are in charge of Labour's social media played a blinder. I was getting...
Doesn't matter though, does it really?
It just proves that it was Corbyn, because all that stuff on social media about the homeless, about the NHS, about all the things that they had...
Whoever was running actual Corbyn's Twitter was doing a stellar job as well.
Brilliant job. So that's why I thought the tide was turning, because I was seeing all this on social media and thinking, if it wasn't for Corbyn, I'd vote Labour, because... So that's why I was convinced it was Corbyn.
I would have preferred Corbyn in than Johnson.
For a start, if you're Jewish, you couldn't vote for Corbyn. You could not.
Plenty of Jews did, I'm sure.
A very, very few.
What are you basing that on? You have no actual figures.
I have no actual figures. Nobody has any actual figures. But come on.
I voted Labour.
Yeah. But I can't imagine anybody who's slightly older than you, put it that way, and slightly more, and knows about the history of things, knows about the meetings he had with Hezbollah and Hamas and the IRA and all that. There was no way he was going to win an election. It just was not a very good look. It was, because at the end of the day, an election is a beauty contest.
But the thing is, though, don't you think the media tarnished Corbyn more than they did Boris Johnson?
Oh, way, way more.
But Boris Johnson had just as many really bad-looking things that he said, but the media will choose the left-wing candidate to criticise way more, which
absolutely.
Is completely unfair. Well, that's what I'm saying. It was unfair to Corbyn, because he's no worse than... Well, I think Johnson is way worse than him.
What you're talking about is the media, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about the newspapers, the Times, the Telegraph, the Daily Mail, the Daily Express. Nobody reads newspapers compared to, certainly young people don't read newspapers. When you consider...
People watch Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby there.
Yeah, but when you
who gave Corbyn a way harder time than they did Boris Johnson.
No, they had an issue that they could go the anti-Semitism thing. They could go on that.
Yeah, but well, they could go on the letterbox comment, any of those things.
Yeah, and I'm sure they didn't mention. I never watch.
They didn't. That's the point. They didn't.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, when you consider the number of people that are watching Twitter and Instagram compared to who reads the Daily Flipping Express,
it's the same group of people. The Twitter thing didn't really matter because it was too small of an audience.
No,
Twitter's
a massive audience.
Yeah, and well, not really though. No, it's just a certain group of like people, and that's why I'm saying that the Twitter gives you the wrong impression of it because it's the same people who retweet stuff and like stuff and the polls that happen on Twitter that said like 70% Labour were never going to be right.
What I'm saying is, Tories had the newspapers, definitely. Labour had social media, definitely, you know, Instagram and Twitter and all that. Yet somehow, mysteriously, Labour lost. I'll tell you why. Corbyn.
Do you want to say that anymore? Because you're not really bringing anything new to the party.
No, I'm not bringing anything new to the party, but I'm just saying that proves it. There's no, you know, you can't deny that it's Corbyn.
No, I'm not. Why are you having a go at me? I'm not denying that it was Corbyn. You're, like, shouting at me for no reason.
No, I'm shouting because...
Because...
For emphasis.
Right, okay. But you've just been saying that it's Corbyn over and over again, and I've not disagreed once.
No, but you're saying it's...
But I think your virulent
hatred
of Corbyn is just as bad as people shouting, ooh, Jeremy Corbyn. It's the inverted cult of personality. Your hatred of Corbyn, regardless of what he says or does, is just as ridiculous as anything else.
No, what he's done is history, basically.
Yeah, I know, but you would hate Jeremy Corbyn regardless of what happened.
No, I mean, I don't even know him. I can't...
Yeah, but exactly, that's what I'm saying. I think this just blind hatred of a person is silly.
Well, no, it's not. Well, it's not just him. He epitomises the left wing of the Labour Party, the momentum, etc., etc.
But the Labour Party should be left wing.
Yes, but it should be left-wing. I mean, the whole point of a political party is to win elections. They have no other point other than to win elections.
Yeah, but... Yeah, to improve the country, I think.
Yeah, but they can't do that without winning an election.
No, I know, but still.
It doesn't just make me angry. I saw Alan Johnson, who used to be a fine Labour MP, has written some great books, which I've read. He was on TV. He was furious. He was absolutely furious.
No, I'm not surprised. I bet Mary Cray, who lost her seat in Wakefield, was furious as well. But also, they've done... Like, the Labour MPs have done it to themselves. Like, it's unfair to blame it all on Corbyn. They should have...
Kicked him out.
Yeah. Like, it was their job to do it as well. Mm. You can't just blame Corbyn. He didn't take the party...
No, I don't blame just
unwittingly.
Corbyn.
Like, he didn't take the party in the night without them knowing.
That's a good point, actually. I blame Ed Miliband to some extent, because Ed Miliband changed the constitution so that you could join the Labour Party very, very cheaply, and therefore they built up this fan club, basically, for Corbyn. Mm. And they couldn't get him out. There was no way they could get him out. The constitution was changed, and therefore the left... momentum had complete control. They had it in a, you know, it was a brilliant takeover of the Labour Party by the left, and all the Blairites suddenly became non-people. You know, all these people like Hilary Benn or Yvette Cooper or anybody you care to mention who was part of the last Blair and Brown government, all those people. The woman in Doncaster, I've forgotten her name now, but she got Caroline Flint. She got knocked out last night. All those Blairite, the ones that came in with Tony Blair, they all suddenly became non-people overnight. It was a Stalinist purge, to be honest.
I think that's clutching at straws a bit to compare Corbyn to Stalin.
Well, no, because he didn't get his hands... He didn't win. We don't know how comparable...
Oh, come on, Dad. Let's not. That's a bit silly. It does make me upset for young people.
Yeah, I'm upset for you. If I had been a young person, I'd have voted Labour. I'm upset that what happened to the Labour Party.
Yeah.
That you didn't have a party that you could vote for, thinking that it was going to do any good.
Well, I just didn't think they would get in, but I didn't think they would lose quite as many seats as they did.
No, neither did I, as you know.
But I also think I think that Labour started losing before Brexit. I don't think this was... I understand why some people are calling it the Brexit election and everything. They have lost it in big Leave seats and stuff. But Brexit was a symptom of stuff that was already there as well. Like, I still maintain that the Brexit election was not about Brexit at all. Well, no, obviously it was a bit, but...
No, I'm inclined to agree.
Not in the... Like, I think it was about a North-South divide. It was about austerity. It was about people feeling not listened to more than it was the actual policies of the EU.
Yes, no, I absolutely agree.
And then I'm saying that was there before the Brexit election, and this election is not a Brexit election. It's about all that other stuff,
I think. Now agreeing with me. This wasn't a Brexit election. It was a Corbyn election.
No, I'm not saying it was a Corbyn election solely either. I think it was a... It was more complex than that.
No, but if people had wanted, if people had wanted to protest about austerity, about public services, about libraries closing down, whatever, the natural protest isn't to, oh, let's vote for the party that's been in for the last 10 years.
No, but I'm saying that I think they voted against their current MPs.
No, I don't think there was any evidence in Wakefield, for instance, that Mary Cray had become sort of suddenly unpopular.
So why did I just don't understand why people vote Tory then? Don't say Corbyn, I'm gonna you're annoying me now.
Problem is, with you not being at university, we can't talk that much about university. You've got a month off.
Yeah, but I was going to talk a bit about coming home.
All right.
It was very weird.
Yes.
The first night back in my bed and stuff. I didn't sleep very well the first couple of
really?
Nights. It felt unfamiliar.
Your bed was too comfortable?
Too comfortable, yeah. I was used to... No, my bed at uni is really comfortable.
Is it?
Hence the mattress topper. It's key. No, it's just weird. Like, also, because I'm in a twin room, I was really not used to it being completely silent like that. And usually, you know, I'm drunk when I go to sleep, so that helps. It was just weird not having someone else's, like... breath there or whatever, like, yeah. It was just strange because I'd not slept in a room on my own for like months.
A couple of months.
Yeah, well, that's still months, plural.
Yes, months, plural.
Also, I was there for 2 months, 3 weeks, which is really closer to 3 months.
Alright.
So that was weird. It was weird, like, being on my own for the first couple of days, you know, like, sat in my room or whatever, because it's always so busy and, like, so much is happening at uni, and there's always, like, someone around or you go and sit together or whatever. And so that was really weird. But now, it's fine.
Yeah, because you're sort of settled in at home, haven't you?
Yeah, I've settled right in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waiting for your food to be served to you.
Oh, it's so nice being able to go to the cupboard and just opening it and, like, having selection. That's the thing. It was not just that I would have nothing. It was the choice. I would never have a choice of things, but now I have a choice of crisps, a choice of biscuits, a choice of, like, pastas.
Mmm. Different shapes.
Different shapes of pasta. Oh,
brilliant,
so good.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like living in a different world.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Should we do some music?
Let's.
Well, a late change to my music choice. I had a Neil Young track, which you probably hadn't heard. However, we were watching yesterday this film about the chap who remembered the Beatles tunes when nobody else did. So we watched that movie, and he played one of the very early Beatles songs, which you said, oh, I've never heard that one, so let's hear it.
Well, she was just 17.
Well, the Beatles from when they were a little rock and roll band, the 22-year-old Beatles, and that's a very early John Lennon composition. I saw standing there.
Yeah, 22. What were you doing when you were 22?
So just working newspapers, really. Yeah.
Not actually, that impressive,
no,
is it?
I'd actually just finished my apprenticeship when I was 22.
Apprenticeship in what?
In newspapers. I was indentured to a newspaper in Bristol. And when I was 22, I just finished. Actually, when I was 22, it was quite exciting because I got a lump sum of money when I finished my apprenticeship and travelled with it. But yeah, but I wasn't one of the Beatles. The point about the Beatles is they were a rock and roll band. They were very influenced by Chuck Berry and etc. etc. And that was from their very, very first LP. I'm surprised you never heard it. And you did say when we watched yesterday, you said I must listen to more of the Beatles.
Yeah, they're just such a little fringe band, aren't they? That I never turn them on.
You can't.
Fairness, no, I actually should, because there's so many songs that I just don't listen to enough of the Beatles. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a great band. I'm a big fan. A big fan of the Beatles.
Right.
I like to get passionate about things. You know, I like the Beatles as much as I dislike Jeremy Corbyn. So,
I think we're going to have to put a limit on you saying you don't like Jeremy Corbyn, because well, I'm sure that there's lots of people listening who do like him, and I'd be interested to hear, you know, what they say about him.
People who like Corbyn. I think what you find from people.
There are a lot of people who respect him for bringing Labour back to the left, which I do understand.
Most of my socialist friends who like.
Sorry, I didn't realise you had a little socialist society going on.
My socialist friends.
Karl Marx and what's his name? Engels, sat in that little
Marx and
cafe.
I have to tell you, this was amusing. But when I was at school, so it'd be about 17 at the time.
100 years ago.
We were doing some sort of word association thing, and some teacher was saying, this is another sixth form, and some teacher was saying, I'm going to ask you what you associate with different things. So, you know, we know, if I say Laurel, you'll say Hardy.
Yeah.
Laurel and Hardy. And then the teacher said, Marx.
You're really showing your age there, Dad.
I know. And the teacher said, Marx. And I said, Marx and Engels. Well, I was thinking Marx and Spencer. There you go. So I've got a sort of bit of a socialist issue, but my socialist friends, most of them were very much in favour of what was in Labour's manifesto, you know, and the whole...
Labour's manifesto was
brilliant.
Brilliant. It reminded me of reading the 1945 manifesto, that when they got that massive Labour landslide and they brought in the NHS and all, and like minimum wage and all these amazing things. It was like reading that.
Yeah.
But they could have done, like... The people in the Financial Times, there was experts who said it was plausible.
It was plausible. It was,
and they could have, they were going to bring back Sure Start and stuff, weren't they? Or not bring it back, but like improve Sure Start.
Yeah,
did it get?
Yeah, it got chopped.
Yeah,
but
they were going to bring back Sure Start.
That was a Blair thing.
Yeah, I know, and they were going to bring that back, but it was such a good manifesto, and it really. And even if you don't like Corbyn, I don't understand why you wouldn't have voted for the manifesto.
Because you didn't believe that he would do it. You know, you need to believe that this
is a
leader.
Yeah, but at least if you were voting for someone who you're like, maybe they won't do it, but at least they want to do it. Over someone who... And I read a really interesting article. This is what I've got saved by Michael Segalov in The Guardian, who was saying that the Conservatives' manifesto was really, really light on detail for a reason. And he writes, they don't want to terrify us with their vision.
Right. So what's he saying?
He's saying that basically they're not going to improve any of those things. They're going to cut more stuff. But they've left that out of the manifesto, and that's why it's so much. It's got no detail in it.
Well, exactly.
I'm just saying, like, why would you vote for that? Voting for someone who, yeah, maybe you won't get it done, but at least how can you not believe in free healthcare and and public services?
No, but they say that the Tories have promised quite a lot in terms of. I mean, you could look at the detail. Under the Tories, it's quite possible that HS2 might get cancelled because they.
But then he cancelled that. Did you see all the stuff about that bridge? And they spent £43 million on it. And then they're never even doing it. So where does the £43 million go?
That was from London. It was.
It was on the bridge.
Mayor of London.
Yeah, and so. They did £43 million for this bridge or whatever, and then it never got done. So that £43 million was just what? Where did
it go? Well, you get lots of projects. That'll be the case with HS2, whichever.
So where does all the money? Where's all that money gone?
Well, it's what they call an infrastructure project. and it'll...
No, I get it, like, I mean, it creates jobs.
I'm not an accountant, yeah.
Trickle-down economy, yeah.
People pay tax, etc., etc. So, but if every penny that was spent was actually spent and, you know, you could see the result of it, it would be very, very unusual. It'd be impossible.
Yeah, I just mean, like, if there's no bridge, then what?
Then it was a waste of money, but it wouldn't be the only waste of money, you know. If you look at something like the NHS, which costs, you know, more than virtually any business in Europe in terms of, what you know, the cost, a lot of that will be wasted. A lot of, every party that comes in, says, oh, we're going to make the NHS more efficient. We're not going to, you know, we're cutting down management and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, it still gets wasted. Loads of money. Management's of whatever it is. I mean, I know this from working at the BBC. Managements of whatever the organisation is know pretty well how to hide the wastage of money. And there will be vast wastage of money. And the bridge was part of his London mayoralship, the money they wasted. But money's
anyway,
been wasted all the time.
We've gone off on a tangent. Let's bring it back to the music. So while this was all happening,
forgot about the music.
Yeah, while this was all happening, and at midnight, everyone was very upset because the results had not gone the way that a lot of people wanted them to, or whatever. All people were very happy
at 10 p.m.
At 10 p.m. But you know, when the day was ended, there was one thing that you always had to look forward to, which was Harry Styles' album was out.
Oh, it came
midnight
out.
Midnight, it came out, the full album. This song's been out for a little bit longer because he released this on his like EP. The full album was out. So if you're feeling not good today, recommend giving it a listen. This song is called Adore You.
Adore You by Harry Styles.
Good clean pop, Dad.
Good clean pop, isn't it?
No, but it, genuinely, the album is actually really good, of what I've listened to. I've not been able to listen to it. It's called Fine Line, and yeah, it was out at midnight last night. But it's very, yeah, it's very good. It's got some good songs in it from what I've heard, and I'm quite impressed with Harry Styles.
And he's from the...
He's from One Direction.
One Direction.
But I think he's really managed to separate himself. Yeah. And I remember reading an article that was in, like, I think it was in, like, the Times magazine or something, like, back in the day, that said, you know, I meet all these boys, and they seem like these boys who were on the X Factor and stuff, and then Harry Styles, and he seemed like a young Mick Jagger or something, they said. Whatever. I think he was... it was clear that he was, you know, going to be the... What of the other bands that have had one person who got famous? He's the Beyoncé.
He's the Beyoncé, or the Robbie Williams. Although, you see, Robbie Williams is rubbish. Well,
Robbie, well, is he the Gary? I don't think he's the Gary either. He's the Beyoncé.
The Beyoncé of Destiny's Child.
Beyoncé of Destiny's Child. Beyoncé, yeah. Kelly and Michelle.
Right. Or he's the George Michael of Wham rather than the Andrew Reed.
Yes. Thing.
Yeah, we got it. Thin on the email front, but I'll do them nonetheless. Because with it being the Christmas season and such like, I'm assuming that people have other things on their mind. They'd be writing Christmas
cards. Fair enough to them as well.
Fair enough.
I wouldn't be writing us an email.
No. Well, Paul Kench, bless him, did. He says, it's a few years since I went to uni. I'm surprised how many of the points from Ruth's list sounded familiar 25 years on. So when you did your list of 10 things you've learnt in your first term, he says, I'd like to add/emphasise a few things. One, the friends you make at uni will largely be the ones that stick with you.
That's lovely.
Leaving your friends from home, especially the ones that don't go to uni, is hard not to do /avoid.
I think he means like leaving behind.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or like outgrowing.
Yeah. Looking back, he says, I wonder if we were all self-medicating for our anxiety with booze. It's not really a thought that would have been entertained at the time. Yeah, it's you because you're anxious
massively,
about the future.
100%. Yeah, and especially in like Freshers Week when you're trying to make friends and stuff. Yeah. I would struggle to have done
alcohol.
It without drinking.
Alcohol, yeah.
But there were, I would remember I was having a conversation with some people in one of the bars when we were chatting about stuff, and one of them couldn't drink because she had like a gastroenteritis type problem, whatever. So she actually couldn't drink, and she had to do Freshers Week sober, which if you could get past like the awkwardness and the having to dance in a club, just would be like so tiring, because the alcohol kind of keeps you awake. It's a stimulant in it, but I mean, and then makes you really tired, but you can kind of hype yourself up, can't
you?
Of
course you can.
But I just think that must be so difficult. Yes. I mean, not that it should be, but I don't think I could do it.
No. Well, he also says, does Paul Kench, he says, this is something you've got to look forward to, Ruth.
And oh, that great.
Is, yeah, when you go to your Hall's 25-year reunion, so in 25 years' time, you'll be going to the Vanbrugh Hall reunion.
Yeah.
He says, and the warden returns, and you realise you are now older than he was when he was your warden in 1992.
I don't know what a warden is.
Well, obviously he had a warden of his hall. He maybe went to Oxford or Cambridge, maybe had a warden.
I think they're called stims, is the equivalent of that.
Stims?
Stims and sticks.
Stims and sticks.
Stick is called student something.
These
are new terms. I don't know. I think they're just the terms for York. It's student something mentor, something something mentor. I don't know, but I get what you mean. But then, no, because the warden would be much older if they're saying that. I don't know what that is.
Hugh Besson, who's our regular email, if Hugh doesn't email us, we know we're in real trouble, says, another good pod, although I'm not sure about eating pasta out of the pan. I can't really get on board with that, eating pasta straight out of the
try
pan.
It.
Yeah,
try it. Don't knock it till you've tried it.
No, true. A question for Ruth now, she's in the swing of things. Does university have to be 3 years, be 4 years in your case? Wouldn't you rather have the course suppressed into two or less? It's always amazed me how much time students get off. The academic year seems to last about 26 weeks, and some of those are reading weeks or whatever, he says. You could still have a two-month summer and 2 weeks for Christmas and do 40 weeks in a year. You'll be saving a year of your life, probably reducing accommodation costs and definitely reducing food costs, says Hugh.
Yeah, I get that. There are universities that do it, especially in America, you can usually make your course 2 years rather than three or four. But I think you need it, because I think you need the first year to not be that intense. Like, I think it's necessary to be able to settle in and stuff. And then also, people love going to uni so much that I'd be quite sad if it only lasted 2 years. But yeah, I guess you could. And then for like accommodation and stuff, I would understand why a lot of people would want it to be like that. I don't know. I'm glad it's 4 years in my case. It's going to be sad for me, though, not graduating with my year and stuff.
Right, because you...
And then, in the last year, I'm going to have to find, like... Because when we were talking about it, we were saying, oh, and then we can try and keep the house for the next year or whatever, but obviously I won't be there the third year, so they'll have to find someone to fill my room if they all do decide to live together or whatever, which will be quite sad. And then they'll all graduate, and I'll be on my year abroad, and I'll have to come back, and it'll be different people and whatever. Yeah. It's quite... kind of sad.
Elite universities, according to a report, should offer places at random to students who make the grade so that underprivileged applicants are not disadvantaged. This is according to a think tank. And what it's saying is that Britain's top institutions, including Oxbridge, are making what they call glacial progress in closing the gap between the numbers of places offered to rich and poor students. So what they say when they say by glacial progress, they mean virtually no progress. Mm. It's moving at the speed of a glacier, basically.
I mean, with climate change, that metaphor will become void, but yeah.
It will, yeah. No, you're right.
We're going to lose a metaphor, if that doesn't scare you about climate change.
We're going to lose a metaphor and several polar bears.
And people.
And people.
And people.
People.
What do they mean, randomly?
Well, what they're saying is that the argument is that a lottery with applicants who achieve certain A-level grades selected at random could be the radical approach to speed things up. So if you just did it by lottery...
Mm, it's not really fair, though, is it? Because especially with places like Oxford and Cambridge, it's not just about the grades that you get.
Well, yes, but
which is a bit of a problem.
Yeah, what it's saying is that the current system with interviews and all that is favouring more privileged students, if you like.
Yeah.
Whereas the system that they're recommending, just at random, would actually turn out to be fairer than...
Yeah, I guess so, but then it's also not fair. You know, there's some people who aren't suited to Oxford and Cambridge, and I think the interviews sometimes they're wrong, I'm sure, and sometimes I bet they pick people because they're because they're Oxford material, their parents went to Oxford, whatever. I'm sure they do that, but sometimes I think they do select people who would.
Glacial.
Yeah, I know, but sometimes I think they do weed out people who are just not cut out for that kind of study. Like, I'm sure if I'd have gone to an interview, I wouldn't have got in because it doesn't suit me at all. And that's what I mean. Like, if they just did it randomly based on people's grades who had applied, and there's lots of people who apply who are not suited to it, and then they'd be getting in randomly. Like, I'm not sure it would actually work.
Well, they're only not suited to it because those institutions are like they are.
No. I mean, not suited to it as in they wouldn't like the type of study it is, the intensive study.
But is it not as intensive as Russell group?
No. It's Oxford and Cambridge is completely different. Their terms are shorter and more compact in terms of, like, what they do. The way that they measure things is different. Like, they're very different schools.
The terms are shorter. So
the terms are shorter.
What, even than yours?
Yeah, so their terms are shorter. So they started later than us.
Worth going.
The York terms are already quite short because they... Did everyone hear that?
Gosh, message.
You just cannot get people with a degree of professionalism anymore.
Right, go and see what you're saying, because that will get us out.
I hope it doesn't. So the York and Durham terms are shorter, I think, than other universities because they're modelled off a semi-Cambridge, Oxford-Cambridge thing. It's like... I think that's the idea. At York, when studying English Lit, I'm trying to remember, I think they do one formative essay every 2 weeks or something. I think that Oxford and Cambridge do like two a week or something. And so they do need to meet people, I think, to see whether they would be suited to it, because I definitely think that I wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And so, it is a different form of study.
So what you're saying really is that Oxford and Cambridge... can't change. They've got to sort
of stay. No, I think they can change. I think there should be higher quotas to me, and that they definitely still do select people who are white and middle class, regardless of whether they've been to state or private school. I still think that's a problem. But
well, this is supposed to solve.
I know, but I'm saying that I don't know whether that would actually work, realistically speaking.
Okay. Let's talk about dating.
Let's
talk about dating. This is a report that I really... I mean, I really got on board with this.
Did you?
Yes, I did. It's a study published in something called the Journal of Social and Personal Relationships.
Sounds like bull, but okay.
The Journal of Social and Personal Relationships, right. but I agree with this 100%, right? Good looks and charisma. So you're right, you've got those.
I think you might be biased, but whatever.
Good looks and charisma can help, but in the world of online dating, grammatical pedantry might be the ultimate turn-on. Researchers have found that singletons searching for love on dating websites are put off by poor spelling, typos, and informal diction. The research, which looked at nearly 800 members of a large dating website in the Netherlands who were asked to read fictitious profiles with and without language errors, they were then asked to rate the attractiveness of the profile owners. So what it's saying really is, if you're ungrammatical and you make typos and things in your dating profile, that will put people off. And it would certainly put me off. I suspect it would you. If you read ungrammatical thing and you thought somebody was ungrammatical.
Just make them seem like it's... I think it would be two things. It would make them seem stupid and also like they don't care. Rather than like just the grammar.
But I'm just saying if I saw somebody and they'd use less when it should be fewer... I couldn't.
No, that wouldn't. That
Are
definitely
you sure?
wouldn't.
Wouldn't put you off at all.
Definitely not. You know what the key in online dating things? Dogs. If you've got a picture with a dog, you're something like 25% more likely to have like a swipe right on Tinder.
Yeah, not if you're young.
Would
they expect you to own a dog?
Not to own a dog. It's just the having the dog.
Just having
in the profile. Yeah, it's genuinely the statistic is mad. I can't remember what it is exactly, but.
But I think it may be a sort of class/education thing. If you see somebody whose profile is ungrammatical, full of spelling errors, that sort of thing, you might think they're a lower caste than you, if you like.
Sorry, when did we start using the word caste?
Just now. I just thought it was the appropriate
No, we're not
word.
Bringing it back at all. Apologies.
What's wrong with the word caste? Are you not
allowed
to use that?
Because it was really first of all, it's massively outdated, and also it refers to the like Indian
their
usage of it, and it was really like racist and stuff.
Is that racist? I wasn't talking about Indian people. I was talking about
everybody. That's where the word like comes from. Yeah, that's what they used to use it. We're not using that word.
Lots of words come from Indian. The word Gymkhana comes from Indian.
I don't know what that is.
A Gymkhana, it's an equestrian event.
We'll leave that there.
Comes from India. There's a lot of words.
I don't think it's a class issue, to be honest.
Don't you think so? Do you not think when you see bad spelling and bad grammar?
No, I think it's just an intelligence thing. I don't think it's a class issue.
Yeah. Okay, it's interesting.
I think there's a tendency to make everything a class issue at the moment.
Not just at the moment, I think it is. You'd rather go out with someone nice and middle class, wouldn't you?
No, I'd rather go out with someone who's lovely and nice and kind.
Subconsciously.
No.
I think grammar and spelling is very, very important.
I agree, but I don't turn it into a class issue.
Well,
I'd rather go out with someone who's kind to me than someone who's...
That's why I said caste rather than class. Because I think it is a different thing. I may be using the word wrongly, but I think
it's an intelligence thing. I'd rather go out with someone who's smart, and also someone who's careful over messages, because it shows that they care about what they're saying to you.
Well, listen to this. I was reading the Guardian this morning.
I'm here to do nothing but listen, Dad.
I was reading the Guardian this morning, and they were talking about Boris Johnson.
Other newspapers are available.
Other newspapers, especially the Times.
which we
really enjoy. But anyway, I was reading the Guardian online thing about the election, and Boris Johnson was saying that he realises that a lot of these voters in the North who voted for him, he says, we realise you may only have lent us your votes, and the Guardian spelt lent, L-E-A-N-T. And I stopped reading at that point. You know, the Guardian was not my date for the morning.
Come on.
Because, you know, lent, L-E-A-N-T, lent us your votes. Very, very bad. A lot of that is due to the fact that newspapers,
just saying it's quite an easy mistake to make that. That would put me off someone, though, yeah.
Yeah. And it would put you...
More what would put me off is ridiculous use of emojis.
Really?
Just like taking obscure... So I don't mind the odd cryy laughy face. That's fine. I prefer to just use a colon and a bracket personally. That's fine. But it's the usage of emojis that only your mum uses. The one with the two, like the little praising hands, multiple thumbs up. The one with the little sweat. What are you doing? Just stick to like one emoji, but not even many, like... The usage of emojis really...
And get your spelling right.
Yeah.
And don't start a sentence due to this. You may have seen my tweet the other day. If you go
No, that doesn't annoy me at all.
What? But it's wrong. It should be owing
to. Yeah, I know, but if it... grammar's only there for the clarity of expression. And being pedantic over grammar for no particular reason is just silly. Like when people are like, literally... And then they're like, well, no, not literally, is it? It's figuratively or whatever. The meaning That's of important. Literally has morphed into something else. Like, language isn't a static thing that doesn't change. Like, it's silly to be pedantic over stuff that when the expression is clear.
I think it's not silly to be pedantic over literally, but simply because...
I think it's overused, but...
It's well overused, but also there is, you know, literally, if you say... I was literally blown away. You then sacrifice the use of when you were, in fact, literally blown away. You know, say, for instance,
the meaning of literally has changed.
Well, it shouldn't change because...
Why shouldn't it change? Why can't it change?
Because you need a word to say, to stress the fact that you weren't blown away in that you thought that the new Harry Styles LP is very good. You know, you weren't literally blown away by Harry Styles. You know, then you would have... You sacrifice the use of a word for when there is actually a gas explosion in your house and you were literally blown away.
Right, well, if you said, I don't think we're going to reach an agreement on this particular.
Well, I don't think there's two ways about it, because if you say the gas cooker exploded and I was literally blown away, something, you enjoyed it then, did you? It was great.
No, that's not. Oh, okay, whatever.
Would you like to know what's the most played song of the decade?
Yeah. Oh, wait, I think I already know. Is it One Dance by Drake?
No.
Oh, he was on Spotify. There was loads of stuff about him being like most people's like artist of the decade and stuff.
Well, the most played song of the decade, and it's somebody we've seen quite recently on the screen.
Just go on, just tell me.
Ed Sheeran.
Oh.
It was Ed Sheeran and Shape of You is the most played song of the decade. He's had 8 UK number ones, sold 150 million records, passed Adele in the list of Britain's wealthiest musicians. Ed Sheeran's now celebrating the fact that Shape of You is the most streamed song of the decade.
That's ridiculous.
It's racked up more Spotify listens around the globe, 6.5 billion Spotify listeners than any other track between 2010 and 2019. Because Spotify have just released
That's all mental, their, really.
All their lists, haven't they? Presumably they sent you the money.
Yeah, my Spotify Wrapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I didn't get that.
You definitely did. Well. You always say, oh, and I never, you and Mum both do it. Oh, well, they never sent me that. And I'm like, no, they did. You just didn't see it. There is a difference.
Have they banned canteen trays at your university to cut waste?
Well, no, we have a tray, but you just put it back at the end.
Right. Well, it says trays have been banned by St Andrews University. They implemented the move after a think tank conducting research at the university found that students were the worst offenders of any age group when it came to waste at mealtimes, throwing away on average food worth £273 each year. Zero Waste Scotland said that banning trays and large plates in canteens would prompt students to think more carefully about how much they could eat.
I don't even put my own food on my plate, so don't really get an option. But I do waste food. They're really big portions.
Well, yeah, you were saying.
I always say, oh, no, not quite as much as that. But then they're like, they get all confused.
You're a growing girl, but you've got important study to do. Do you have a meme for us?
No, but I have a Your Fashion. So these are the confessions that people can send in, and they're all York University students. Although there's been some... What's the word?
Dispute? Some controversy?
Controversy, I think, is better. There's been some controversy on this Your Fashion thing because they've been accused of stealing posts from other... confessions account, the Durfess or whatever, which is Durham Confessions, and there's been a whole thing. But anyway, we'll ignore all that because it's really quite confusing. It really goes quite deep back, and I don't really know what's going on. But this I thought was quite funny. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I pretend to listen to grime, but all that's in these headphones is the powerhouse of Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart. I fear if anyone found out there, they'd not find me quite so sexy.
That's brilliant.
There was a couple of Your Fashions as well that was like, I can't stop listening to James Blunt. Went 7 hours without listening to James Blunt, my greatest achievement. Like, loads of James Blunt-related things.
Yeah, because there is such snobbery attached to music, especially when you're young.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, for instance, you won't admit that you're a real fan of Ed Sheeran.
I'm not a real fan of Ed Sheeran. I just don't think he's terrible. I don't love Ed Sheeran.
When we watched yesterday, the sort of fairly average film about the guy who remembers the Beatles and nobody else remembers the Beatles and all the songs are written about him, etc.
Fairly average. Dad did cry though.
Yeah. Well, I always cry at films. I mean, it started off as a good film, didn't it? The first 20 minutes was funny.
Yeah. Go on. What were you saying? Get to your point.
My point is that when Ed Sheeran, yeah, he's great. Ed Sheeran.
No, that wasn't what I was saying. I just said, it is good that he always does stuff. Like, he's always, like, he was in Game of Thrones and he was in Bridget Jones and, well, that rhymed. And he was in that film. You know, like, I like that he does stuff. You know, he wrote all Justin Bieber's songs. He's hardworking. That's all I was saying. I don't love him. I don't think his music is very good.
It's just cheesy. You like his music.
I don't ever listen to it. If it comes on the radio, then I would turn it off.
We've had Ed Sheeran on in the car.
We haven't. There's not a single Ed Sheeran song on my playlist.
Well, there's several on mine, and you're going to hear them all the way back.
No.
Okay, but there is a lot of snobbery about music.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Between the ages of 12 and 14, it was mostly just me pretending to know the words of songs I did not know the words to.
And also sad, pretending not to like very, very popular acts.
Yeah, probably.
Have a lesson on this. When ABBA came out, when ABBA were out in the 70s, and Dolly Parton and a lot of other artists and some of the disco songs.
I love Dolly Parton.
Yeah, Earth, Wind and Fire, all that. People would say, oh, God, I can't stand disco. I hate ABBA. And everybody would say, oh, God, not another ABBA song. And people used to think it was rubbish. People would go around deliberately saying ABBA is rubbish. It's turned out over the years not to be rubbish. But everybody said it was. So be careful what you reject. In 20 years' time, Ed Sheeran will be cult listening.
Yeah, cult it
and
will.
All that other stuff that people reject as being too cheesy. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the reasons we may not be getting many emails at the moment is we haven't actually said...
The email address. If you do want to get in touch, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That's martinandruthpodcast, all under... No, not underscore. What's it called? All lowercase, @gmail.com. And one more time, because I have to say three times.
It's a rule of three.
Okay, go on then. Just say it.
I'm going to. Martin and Ruth.
Just say it, like, just normally.
If you do want to get in touch, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. You may agree or disagree with some of the views expressed, whether it's about grammatical accuracy in dating or Jeremy Corbyn and the uselessness or not thereof.
And if you are online, you can go onto Spotify and hear the two songs from this week in full on the Spotify playlist and all the other songs from all the other weeks. If you just type in Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, me and my dad, but Martin and Ruth podcast or Martin and Ruth or whatever, we'll get you there. So see you next week.